Program 4, there is no significant increase in the operational budget for this program. The substantial decrease reflected over the period is due to the now $481 million in respect of reimbursement of content loans granted to SA Express, which constitutes part of the transfer of staff of tax to government, which increased the total amount to be transferred to SA Express to $585 million in 2008-09. The amount is payable only after SA Express has been legally transferred from content to government. Outstanding issues on ownership and transfer of assets and liabilities have been finalized, and confirmation has been submitted to National Treasury to this effect. This program is a joint project facility. The overall increase in this program is to meet the objectives of the unit, which includes the commencement of the SA Craft project, which will leverage the Eastern World program to enhance manufacturing, technology, and skills base, the competitive supply of development program in 2008-09 to research Eskom and continent key commodities and South African capabilities. UNIDA benchmarking and participating in global supply exchange program and regional supply development program, enabling the integration of regional suppliers to regional and global value chains. The upward trend continues into 2019 and then reduces in 2010-11 as various projects are completed. The 2006-07 Auditor General Report, the Department achieved an unqualified audit opinion without emphasis of matter for the 2007 financial year. Four audit committee meetings were held over the 2007-08 financial year with an average attendance of 90%. At the commencement of the year under review, the committee comprised 5 members. However, during the year, 1 member resigned. I'd just like to also add that earlier on, the chairperson asked me to report on expenditure in the previous year. So the department underspent by $280,088,000. This was as a result of that amount of $280 million that we had requested, or the previous instructed us to request a transfer payment of 2 billion rand in the previous year for Denel. However, it turned out that this was not required and it was capital payments and shares were issued. Therefore, the department in real terms underspent by 88,000. That's for the record. 280 million was not drawn from the, we didn't draw the money, but it reflected as an underspend of approximately 9% on our budget for the year, whereas in real terms it was less than 1% underspend.
Thank you very much.
That's the time for questions. You've already answered my first question. We saw it on page 5 where you refer to not using the 2%. If you will end up with some limitation. So if you exclude that amount set aside for that, then your understanding will be less than 2%.
Well, that is the aim, to spend within the 2%.
Thank you, Chair. And I wonder if the last submission around the understanding, we couldn't get a written report in that regard, because it doesn't seem to be part of the same time that we've got already. I just wanted to share with you, I mean, these are budget settings, and I think that's one of the things that we to do is to spend some time on some of these financials that we've given us today. A lot of it makes for a rather difficult reading, I must say. And perhaps if I could just by way of illustration just go to program one, which is slide 7. I take it that when you read these columns firstly, that we're talking about the usual trends to illustrate the definition from. When we look at these cases, we add 3 zeros. Under compensation of employees under budget 07-08, that should be 29.014 million. Am I reading that correctly? Okay. And I take it that that's the system that you use throughout with all of these statements, that you just add in 3 zeros in order to read the numbers accurately. Exactly. Okay. The one thing that I'm not quite sure of, just on these programs, and I'll come back to the reading of the thing, if I may, through your chair, because maybe I should deal with that immediately so that you don't lose the train of thought. On page 10, I must say I don't know then how to read those figures. First figure be 3.7 billion. Is that right? That figure in the script at the bottom there, how would I read that? In 208 MPEF department, it's greater than amount of. How do I read that figure? I mean, what is that? That's 14 billion, right? Because you see, for me, billion would be 3 zeros. So that would be, I must add 3 zeros to that if I were to read the figures. Can I then on that particular issue deal with, and maybe this is an unfair question to you, but that last statement where the minister has indicated that this is acceptable and further funding will be generated from private investors or other shareholders. If I look at the differential, that's a substantive amount. And I'm not sure if, and maybe, for what, you know, if you can't answer that specific question, exactly to what extent have we secured that kind of funding? Are we still in the process, or is this just a hope? And a little prayer that we will be able to reach that device. So that's your question, my first question. Coming back to the previous slide on administration, I just want to make sure as well that we understand what the various components mean. I know in that would say to be a standing item for livestock. I think you could understand what livestock was under justice. And then I was told it's code for something else. So I take it that these things have an equally understandable meaning to accountants that some of us don't understand. Goods and services there, I take it would be that script under the table which says equipment contracts, telephone stationery are all being processed as part of goods and services under that particular item. But that clearly means that goods and services in every other program, that's not it. It's not telephones and it's not stationery, it's not training, recruitment, advertising, software licenses. So for example, when we go to legal and governance, I'm not sure what we're spending 10 million on when it comes to goods and services. Likewise, in every other program. So you can give us some sense of that. What would have also been rather helpful is to have the program together in one bundle so that you can actually see from one program to the other and measure the expenditure on things like employees, because I think each program has got an amount added. undertaken separately for salaries and wages. This one clearly looks like it's the biggest item on salaries than any other program. But it would have just been nice to have them put together so that you could see, you know, who's spending the most on salaries, how many people are actually employed in each of these units, and have even a breakdown of salary pay for each program. Then likewise with transfers, I'm not sure what that means. Is it environment? Is it transfers out of the department with sufficient approval, you know, given for that kind of thing? I'm not even sure if I'm speaking to the right answer, because I'm not sure what transfers mean. Likewise with capital, is this furniture or, you know, motor vehicles? I'm not sure what that is. And I noticed that we don't have an item on depreciation, which is normally also included in there. I'm not sure if you just want to put it in there for exigency. Okay. Thank you, Shepard.
Thank you, Chair. We to address the issue of the difficult reading and the clarity of this, we can simplify further. Perhaps in our minds it is simplified more. However, we take the note of that and we will definitely address that. In terms of the minister indicating that he was comfortable with what has been allocated for the PVMR and the private sector contributions and other shareholder contributions, I would like to refer the answer to that question to the line to the broadband and energy unit. If you would like them to respond now, otherwise when they give their presentation, perhaps they can give you the answer to that question. I don't have all those details. The meaning of the lines in the budget, equipment services is, yes, all the items that are required to run the organization efficiently, among other the ones that have been mentioned here are ever again. It includes everything that is required, stationery, cameras, all that kind of thing. There is a breakdown in the E&E, which we can again simplify if so required. That's really the interpretation of goods and services is purchases that the department expenditure that the department incurs in different categories. Some of them, we've got communication, which is our communications unit. That could be the advertising, the media, things like that. Computer services, consultants, contractors, and special services. Those would be things that we may have co-sourced or outsourced. And certain contracts that we've entered into with service providers, where it's not viable for us to have a component or she has as many staff in the unit. Inventory is normally the stationery. Maintenance, repairs, and running costs are just exactly what they are. Operating leases are the leases for equipment, the rental for equipment that we have in the department, where we don't purchase things outside because it's not viable either to do that. Travel and subsistence, that is our travel and subsistence for the unit, which covers the administration of the minister, management, which is the DG, and the office corporate services, which covers all the support, the cross-cutting support programs in the DTE, which is made up of internal audits, corporate services, facilities and management, facilities and administration, state finance, security, communication, all those are in the administration budget. Municipal services are the rates and taxes and things that are charged to us by the landlord, and audit fees are the fees that we pay to the Auditor General. Households is money that is granted by National Treasury for sponsorships that the department may be granting to various national initiatives and things like that. And this is an ongoing one of our very big initiatives is 16 days of activism. Machinery and equipment is capital assets is machinery and equipment, which is your desk, computers, servers, that type of thing. So I hope that that does break it down and make it a little bit more understandable to the members.
I suppose we're having to deal with a couple of problem challenges. In the way that Treasury classifies and clusters the information in the various documents, this is what we live by, and this is what would be in the E&E, and this is what they've done. So to get an individual breakdown of what each broad class classification of figures, we have to just use a printout of the guidelines that we get from Treasury that make up those very components, but it's also possible to follow when you go through what is the makeup of all of the goods and services across the board. In as far as indicating how many people are in each unit, all of the units will indicate that to you in the contract. Salaries in government are preset, so if we say that in the chief director the range goes from X, Y, to Z, we can deliver that, but we don't give you what each individual salary, personal salary is in each of the categories. But we can indicate that there's so many directors and director salaries start here and they end at a particular point in the bank. I want to go back, if you go, unfortunately, really deep apologies. The numbers in the write-up in the English, wherever there's space, is supposed to be a comma. So that's 14 points, it's supposed to be 14.7 billion there, 486 comma. I don't understand what happened to our continent, whatever, but it's there. It's confusing me. But in a lot of the places where there's in the document, so we'll fix that and we'll give you the document that the colleague would get. That there's two categories. There's 14.7 billion, right? I'm not entirely sure what's happened, but we've asked people to really make sure to fix those because they are inaccurate regulations. Chair, I also wanted to raise something because it's the first time that we've been requested to indicate what we asked for and what we were given. Now, I can understand that for the portfolio committee it's actually quite crucial. But there's a little bit of a difficulty that this places us in with the Treasury. Because it's a matter of course that data that goes to them, and I'm not aware of that ever being released before. And by virtue of the fact that this is a public hearing, this then becomes public. So I think we need to find a way to deal with that, because also a couple of journalists have picked it up without being here to be able to hear the explanation attached to this. It does raise some serious concerns, and actually, in certain instances in some of the SOEs, especially the ones that have to borrow money in the capital markets, there could be a serious problem. For example, so now this could still go back into the market and raise the money. In the case of PDMR, that was the worst case scenario that we indicated, is that if we didn't get all the other parties, the reason why we ended up saying 3.5 billion most of the time is that we've been able to get other equity participants onto the PDM model. So we'll find sharing the PDM. Then we'll help to find the rest of the project. But I really am genuinely quite worried about the effect in the instance of the enterprises that have to go into the capital markets to raise money of this information being made widely available, because it does suggest that the shareholder is not very supportive of the company. But I am mindful of the value for the portfolio committee and this information going forward. But I just wanted to raise that as a great concern of my side.
Thank you.
It might have been useful, I think, to mention there that the 8.3 million which has already been put into CGM are by government. In the previous expenditure.
Yes.
So that you can see that government is bringing its part. They're not giving 3 billion and expecting the market to come up with 11. They have already put in 8 billion before this.
Yes.
Just to respond, I mean, I think that one of the issues that we face as a given is that treasury does not necessarily mean to say that it lacks confidence in any of its institutions when it doesn't approve the full amount requested. It could mean that they want further information, or that the information that they wanted to have was not facilitated and given to them. It could mean a whole range of factors. It could mean that Treasury feels that at this stage X amount is required, and that they will review once certain other factors have been satisfied and so on. So I think that the implication suddenly that if they're unfunded mandates, in fact, people are concerned borrowing to open markets is possibly an assumption that people make, but it's not necessarily based on fact. Having said all of that, I just want to assure the DG that Parliament always asks for unfunded mandates. Now, this slide is that this is the first time that we, in fact, in justice, we would have a whole session on unfunded mandates. And I take it it's because of the nature of DGE that's very different. Part of the work of Parliament is, of course, to see what it is, what kind of services want to deliver, because there's no money. And likewise, we'd like to know what it is that is going to delay projects that you have in the pipeline.
Mm-hmm.
Clearly, it seems to me that that has major consequences in terms of your timelines and so on. So it's quite crucial, I think, that we do have this exercise as far as unfunded mandates are concerned. And also, remember, we play a big part, and hopefully in the next session, when goals are passed, allowing Parliament to amend the budget, it's going to become even more crucial that you use this platform as a lobbying structure as well. Because Treasury clearly has to respond to the Joint Budget Committee once they're able to change the budget and once they have the authority to do so, as to why it is that certain unfunded mandates exist.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that this idea that there's necessarily an adverse implication for our state-owned enterprises is something a little more nuanced to it than an adverse impression. So I do hope that it becomes a usual practice on the part of the department when it does deal with particularly the budget going forward. But if I may say through you, just pose this question. You see, transfers, and I don't want to necessarily get into, because I realize that these are things kind of fit in the software and this is how it operates and so on. But it doesn't help for us to know that goods and services have been centralized into administration. Okay? On the one hand, when it comes to telephone enforcement software licenses, etc. But then there's no explanation when you have goods and services in your program too, if you're working. And it's not a criticism as such, because I do realize that being an accountant and so on, it's very difficult for you to do what you do best, which is short treasury speak. But for our purposes, we don't deal with these accounts every single day, and it becomes extremely difficult to understand. I don't know why legal and government, for example, has a huge budget for goods and services, and that's quite a huge budget. So my worry is not going to be in program, let's say, 4, where you're spending about 4 million. It's going to be around this one, because that's about 10 million.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what informs that. Like maybe that they're very legitimate costs and so on, but I don't know. And so even if it is just a write-up, I think it will give us something. A lot of the complaints of members have been around how do we read these things? You want us to oversee and you want us to deal with these financial concerns, but we don't understand what that means. I don't understand what capital means. I don't know why you spend 16,000 or whatever it is under that. So it's very difficult for us to come to terms with this, given that this is a budget cycle. And that's the only point that I'm making. And I take it that when we deal with transfers in program one, if you were to just go there, you'll see here you say transfers Alex course. But in program one, you just say transfers. And I don't know what that means. And it doesn't make any sense to me. And then I suddenly see that it's, you know, it's substantial amounts of money. So that's the only thing that I'm trying to pinpoint. And, you know, I think all I'm saying is that we would need some supplementation of the document so that it becomes a more readable way of us interacting. Chair, can I just find out? In terms of the compensation for employees, and I think we must get this breakdown that the teacher was talking about closeness, and I don't mean names of people, but certainly in terms of the ranks and the levels and so on, because it doesn't give us a sufficient idea as to how many people. For example, you've got a huge budget under administration. My assumption is that you have many people working. But I could be wrong. You could have two people earning two salaries working there. Now, I'm not saying that is the case, but that helps us in terms of our oversight to understand exactly which units are costing us more and what their outputs are and whether we're actually getting value for money out of them. So I think that we need that exercise per program. Program, I won't say unit anymore because they're looking at different levels. Per program, what are the staff allocations, and if we have a certain public service post attached to them, clearly those salaries are public knowledge, so that must be factored in. It would also help, I think, to factor in insert and to see exactly, because I take it compensation of employees would include insert. But what I'm not sure of, Chair, is whether compensation of employees also incorporates consultants, and whether that would be under goods and services instead. And if we can get a breakdown of the amount of consultants in terms of the expenditure of consultants that we use, as opposed to, because I understand that you've got, and I'm not sure if your contract employees are part of your salaries and compensation of employees, or whether they fall under consultants as well as you. So all of that detail, I think, is something that we would require you to achieve and how to adopt it. Thank you, sir.
One short question. At once, I just want to check the statement that there was an indication that certain services are being centralized, telephones and so on and so on. I just wanted to check that whether that is applicable for the operational reasons, but in terms of quality, each and every program. In budgeted capacity, but in terms of operationalizing it, it's done centrally. So, what I'm just looking to, you find that what they say is really like goods and services is applicable to each and every program. But there was that statement of telephones and other things being centralized. I just want to get a clarity whether I assume the centralization is in terms of operational, but in terms of budget, it's in programs.
Yes, if you look at slide 4,
so that is a total for the department.
Yes.
And then you've got, as the chairperson mentioned, that you've got centralization, but it only accounts for half of the money which has been allocated to goods and services.
The services that are centralized are the telephones. They are budgeted after estimates that were done on the previous year. The decision was taken to centralize it because it was easier that way. However, the units are informed of their usage every month, and from a management point of view. Certain other things, very small things, may not have been centralized, but the main expenditures that are mentioned there have been centralized, and they are not, and they are budgeted accordingly from historical figures that were used instead of having it spread across. If I could just answer one of the other questions that were in transfers in administration. And I will give a far more detailed breakdown of this. The transfers in administration don't refer to transfer payments per se, but they are classified in the scale of classification and it falls under households, which is the sponsorships and donations category under transfers. It will not, it's not an expenditure item in terms of that. So all the other issues that were raised in terms of clarification, we will attend to and endeavor to give you a full breakdown of those. Depreciation, we don't really have depreciation in the department at all. Assets, etc., are not depreciated in government, so those figures don't come into it.
Chairperson, yeah, it's actually not a question, it's sort of a suggestion. I can clearly understand why the department put in a schedule like that one on the presentation there with capital transfers. Some of us who came from other committees, like SCOPA, budget, and finance, or the public sector, I used to be the National Director of the National Police Budget since 2000. That is a typical format required by Treasury. What I would like to suggest to these people is once they put up a table like that, they must just elaborate to the committee, you know, and the people will understand. So they have to put it in to different categories as required by National Treasury, and then they must come to the committee and explain, not just in one paragraph, they must take it step by step, we mean the following. And then they can refer to transfers where you separate it between the different SOEs, you know, they can refer later to the later tables. But just to give a thing like this without an elaboration, might get people come to you. They might just elaborate a little bit more. But as it is, it might be required.
Yes, and the
department's notes and thanks to the
members. I just want to read something there on page 15. It was Department for International Development. What is that? DFID. Now, 15, slide 15.
It's CFR's name. It is the branch of the UK government that administers donor funding.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you very much. Any other questions?
Yeah, I just wanted to find out, I was left with a distinct impression, possibly wrongly, around SAA. When we had the discussions earlier, when you felt that there wasn't actually any money transferred to SAA, and that in fact what was done was that they were guaranteed. I see now an amount of 744, I imagine it's 744 million again. 744.4 million. Is this in the form of actual money going to SAA? So the issues that were raised previously around the concerns of Treasury around their restructuring based on this plan, restructuring plan. I think that those concerns of Treasury have been addressed and that's why there is this allegation. Or am I already assuming things?
The 7.4 relates to, I think, 6.5 million that went into SAA to help fund the retention package for the Panama strategy. It wasn't the total amount required to recapitalize. For this?
The
VSP. Yes. Oh, yes, VSP, yes. That would have been the 6.5. And then the rest of the 1.3 went in the form of a guarantee and not as direct cash. The balance of that is 104, right? That's for tax.
If you can just talk in full terms, when you say 685, what is that? 685 what?
685 million.
685 million.
Yes.
Was for VAT.
Yes.
That's in the
0708
budget.
Yes.
Then the balance of that?
Was for...
No. The balance of that amount is actually an allocation for VAT, which we're still not sure is applicable or not to that particular transaction. It looks at this stage, and the thing you may want to add is that there won't be VAT applicable, so we won't get the full 744, we'll get the 685. Allocated to SA. All the SAC transactions are in the following year, I don't know.
So the 585 is going to SAC, not SA. Chief, I may, and the 585 comprises a component which is the value of the transaction, the purchase price, and the rest is 104 million, and the rest relates to the servicing of the leases on the aircraft.
Could we just then go through all of the transfers and get some explanation as to what exactly those transfers are for?
You're saying the amount is being transferred to SA Express. The way I understand it is, SA Express belongs to Transnet. We purchased it from Transnet. So does the money then not go to Transnet? Why is it going to SA Express?
The money is only payable upon transfer. And it's the effective date of the transaction was actually at the end of the previous financial year. So we are already liable for the cost related to the aircraft. The purchase price component would only be transferred at the time that the shares are transferred to ourselves, to DBU.
I'm thinking is that given the fact that these various DGs were responsible for the different employees to start making their presentation, is that it might be better to pull the discussion of the transfer payments and the details of the transfer payments to the DGs responsible for the enterprise, because they would be the ones who would put in the application for the money, for the funding directly. And so they would be the ones able to indicate the breakdown of this amount is for X and the other amount is for whichever other enterprise.
Okay, I think it would help us to focus on each specific area. Are there any other questions of thank you very much. We then go on to
Chair, LTR, legal. Are you doing?
Okay, now Luke, what do you do with your legal government? Okay. And you tell me the position. Okay. You tell me the
wonderful.
We will move to problem 3. Why in Africa there's a lot of coups and so on? If the other person is in power, the next day someone else. You just hear on the radio that now I'm in power. So that's it. You follow through. So I will be just telling the problem 3 and also the administration. But I'll hand it over to you.
Okay, thank you, Chairperson. Well, Program 3 states is the Legal Governance Risk and Transactions Unit. And from that program, I want to start with legal. And I think the first as it stated, our purpose essentially, we provide support for the department across all the SOEs and in the three sub-branches specifically, which is legal, governance, and risk management. And we basically advise the department also in relation to a lot of the transactions that come through either from the SOE themselves or some of the transactions that government itself or the department was involved in. And our priorities for this coming financial year are to process through the South African government shareholder management legislation. Gigi did speak about that earlier, in that we're in the process of finalizing the conceptual document around that. We had started submitting the concept to Cabinet itself, and we intend following that through with a bill, a proposed bill. And the next priority would be to implement the deal of settlements. As an Exco minister did speak extensively about Alexco and the activities of transferring the land and the mining rights to the community. And that is part of the settlement that was reached with the community in court last year. So we'll be focusing on implementing the provisions of that deed of settlement. The next one would be to close Aventura. Aventura, we had done a transaction where we had sold some of the resorts that were owned by Aventura, and we're in the process of finalizing the transfer of those assets. There has been threatened legal action against that transaction. We still haven't received any cases yet. So we're also working on finalizing that so that we can finalize the transfer of the resource and then wind up the company. The next one is the KLS disposal. I'm not sure if members are aware of the fact that, well, Minister in the morning had also spoken about our attempts to privatize KLS, and the last attempt ended up with the Competition Tribunal, where the Competition Commission also then suggested ways of ensuring that the transaction itself does not have any anti-competitive results or consequences. So we're working to revise the transaction design to ensure that it does comply with the comments and the concerns of the Competition Commission and the comments that came from the Competition Tribunal as well. And then we'll also be focusing on SOE and shareholder risk assessments. Those are obviously quite key for us in light of the unplanned outages earlier this year, and that they also just brought back home to us, so that's something that we're going to be needing to focus on quite extensively. So we're going to also have to do a lot of work to try and capacitate risk management. And then we'll continue with the general legal counsel services for the department. I'll speak on those when I go into the details of the actual program, of the legal program as well, and the legal assistance that we provide to the department. And then continue providing legal support for some of the transactions that the department is involved in as a shareholder. Okay, in terms of our budget, as you can see, in 07-08, this financial year that's ending, compensation for employees was 13 million, I think that is. 13,954,000. And in the new financial year, it's just slightly below that by a few hundred thousand rand. And then for goods and services, this year we had 10 million, and that's going to increase to 14 million. And that should also help us with external support, also in the areas such as risk management particularly. And then in terms of transfers, a budget of 72 million, and it will be going up in the new year into 130 million. And then capital that was budgeted for this year was 16 million, and we don't have anything budgeted. So our total budget in the new year will be 158 million. Okay, now we're just going to go into a detailed discussion of our business plan as a unit, and I'll just wait for Rudy to bring that up.
I'm not sure where are you going to do that. The chairperson but just said that we deal with a specific transfer under program. Now we're there on the transfer alert. Whether you can explain in detail what is contained in the transfer.
Okay, And the transfers in our unit, because our unit also comprises transactions, and the transactions, the two key transactions are Alexco, which is implementing the deal settlement, and the privatization of KLF. Now, on the transfers that were indicated in our budget, those relate to Alexco. Those were allocations that were made so Alexco could have working capital, for Alexco's working capital, and secondly, to implement the deed of settlement, which is the work that's part of our priority for this new year. So we don't, because we don't deal with any other specific SOEs, our transfers are limited to that. In terms of,
could we just get some indication as to what portion is what of the transfer?
Because only a budget is 100%, and it's same as zero, so they share what it is starting with.
Chile, in relation to Alexco, for the past year, an amount of 44 million for the purposes of working capital, and the remainder was for the purposes of implementing the settlement agreement, and in particular, the cost related to the implementation of the settlement relates to environmental rehabilitation and township development costs. For the next year, the allocation includes, again, a percentage of working capital, but the majority, I'd say about 8% of the cost, actually relates to the remaining cost portion in terms of constructing the services for the purposes of township development.
Okay, the first sub-program is legal services, and the first project or activity that we do, which is an ongoing activity, is debt recovery for the department. This relates primarily to bursaries or loans that may have been granted to DP employees who have since left but have not paid, those bursaries, whether the conditions or requirements for them to repay. Then the activities that we would take under that activity would include tracing debtors, because in some instances they're not, we wouldn't know where the employee has moved on to, and they would have, in some instances they also have changed their addresses and all of that. So we would implement the initial steps of trying to track them and issuing them with letters of demand, and once we have found them, and then determining their ability to pay and whether or not there's any property that should be attached. And then following that, we would then contact the state attorneys as our attorneys to then take the matter forward should that be necessary, where we have not been able to reach any settlement with the former employee. As was stated there, in terms of time required and due date, it is ongoing work, so we don't have any specific dates, because it also depends on a number of factors, whether or not we can find the employee firstly. And it also then would depend on the rules of court if we end up going through a court action. Then the next one is litigation, that is usually where the department or the minister are cited as respondents or defendants in any matter. Most of the litigation that has come through the department or the minister has been the respondent or the defendant. The two major ones are it's a claim against government and Transnet by Umthunzi for 2.2 billion rand. And it's basically a claim by Umthunzi that they were promised that there was an agreement with government and Transnet for them to buy and change shares. Currently the matter has been through That's the legal processes, the court action, and we are and it's due to go to trial. So we're just waiting for a trial date. So once we have received that, then we'll be able to determine more or less the time that will be required for us to work on that. At this stage, we have engaged counsel through the state attorney's office, but we'll be working with them. And then due date on either briefing memos, and that would also depend on when we receive the trial date. And the output there would be to either successfully defend the matter or to settle with the applicant. And the next one is Alexco, when it relates to management consultants, Madeira. That one is currently in abeyance, and we've engaged the state attorney to advise us on a defense strategy on how to take the matter forward, because it has been in abeyance for a while. So we anticipate that we would receive that strategy from the state attorney soon, and once we receive that, we would then also brief the minister and the DCE, the department, sorry, and on that strategy, whether or not we agree with it and whether we recommend it, and then also propose a way of taking the matter forward. Then the next set of activities that we're going to be undertaking in the new year is winding up of entities. One of those is the Diablo Trust. The Diablo Trust is a trust that was set up for ESCOM employees when ESCOM was issuing securities when it's in its IPO. Telkom employees when Telkom was being IPO'd. And so with that one, some money was paid out to some employees and some of the beneficiaries of that trust. However, the term of the board of trustees has expired, and there's still money that hasn't been paid out to other beneficiaries. So what we've proposed to cabinet is that the assets of the trust, that the trust wound up, and that the assets of the trust be distributed to government under the supervision of the department, DOC, and National Treasury, and then we would undertake then tracing those beneficiaries and try and pay out the remainder of the beneficiaries. We anticipate that that would take us about 2 years once cabinet has approved and we've appointed service providers to assist us trace the beneficiaries. However, in the middle of, in August of 2008, we would then also provide a briefing memo on how, on progress, on all the activities that are listed there. Then the next entity to be wound up is Aventura, which I discussed in our list of priorities. As I stated, Nicandro has threatened legal action, but they haven't actually issued any papers yet against the department. And so that has been preventing the transfer of the resource, which we call the sale assets, to the purchasers. So we are currently going to be in discussions with the country just to ascertain whether or not they want to take the matter forward and how we're going to proceed to deal with it. But our intention is that once we've resolved that issue with Nicandro and also resolved the assets to which the threatened action relates, because there's also confusion about which assets they claim that they were promised. So we just need to resolve that. And once we have resolved that, we will then transfer and complete the transfer to the purchaser and then wind up Aventura, because there would be no assets left in Aventura. And that entire process of winding up Aventura, we anticipate, will take us about a year once the assets have been transferred. And we would also again brief the DG and the minister during the same period around August 2008 on progress. The next activity is the now end state, but I think this one I'll leave out because I'm sure John and the program four will go into extensive discussions because it actually appropriately falls under the SOE, the DGE SOE team. And then I'll just discuss the areas where we support the SOE teams in the department. And with respect to now, the first one will be the NCACC bill. We await
Chair, the NCACC, there's an act, and potentially a bill that will revise some of the provisions of the Act to potentially streamline the regulatory export regulatory system. But the DOD is still in the process of drafting it. Pardon? Oh, I'm sorry. National Convention on Arms Control Committee.
So as I stated, there we would be supporting a trans team on the work, mainly with just reviewing the provisions of the draft bill and amending them or revising them, depending on our discussions with the FOECT team as well. And we anticipate that we will start working on that at the end of March. And that will take us into the new year. And the final output would be the bill, but that would also then depend on the work that DOD itself has done and how far they've gotten. And then the next one will be assisting again the Denel team in the Department of the Establishment of Dairy, which again I want to ask John to state.
Dairy. There is the Defense Evaluation and Research Institute. So essentially what it does is it consolidates all test and evaluation services that exist in Arms Corps, Denel, and the CSIR into one institute to rationalize nationally.
There is an intention that there would be legislation to establish legislation for dairy, and that we as the legal team would then come in and just assist with writing up the principles surrounding that bill as well as the draft provisions of the bill itself, and then taking it through, processing it through Parliament for final assent and promulgation. And then we would also assist in with corporate governance, assisting them in providing with provisions around corporate governance, and then also establishing the corporate governance system within dairy. And then the next activity would be under to support the CDMR team of the department to finalize the subscription of shares by new shareholders in CDMR. The intention would be currently the state is a majority shareholder. Well, actually, currently we're working at finalizing subscription of shares by existing shareholders. And the intention is that the state is also going to take up majority shareholders. However, we would be in the new year, we would be introducing new shareholders into PBMR. And so the support that we then provide is to review the transaction governance documents, such as the shareholders agreement, and then to advise the department and work with CDMR and other shareholders on those agreements until we finalize them and get them signed. And we anticipate that it could take us 2 weeks once we receive final agreements, just to finalize them and process them for ministerial signature. That should take us about 2 weeks. The next one will be assisting the transport team on introducing on the possible introduction of a strategic equity partner for South African Airways Technical. However, the transport team in the department would come up with a concept document around the introduction of a private sector equity partner. And once that has been approved and is policy, and once they then commence with the transaction, we would then assist with the legal support, reviewing documents and assessing any legal risks for the department. We haven't really put any kind of due dates on that because that's dependent on any conceptual policy that the DPE transport team comes up with, and then how far we start implementing the introduction of the strategic equity partner itself. And then again, another activity, again, assisting the transport team to review. I think the minister did speak also quite a bit this morning about corporatization of NPA, and that we would be exploring the requirements and the shareholder minister to start corporatizing NPA and the implications that could have for Transnet itself. So we would then provide legal assistance in that area, and then just generally on the Sports Act itself to ensure compliance with that act by Transnet and the department itself. And then we would also assist in relation to the KUKHA, the execution of introducing a private sector partner in KUKHA. Again, all of those are also dependent on the work that the transport team will do to finalize and together with Transnet before we can then be of assistance. But we anticipate that that's also what's going to be happening this year. What was listed up there are mainly ad hoc activities. Sometimes we get referrals from Minister on certain issues that we may be required to review. And the work that we would do would be basically to brief the Minister on whatever legal issues arise out of the matter that's been referred. And then in some instances, for example, we may get a complaint from a member of the public, whether it's a former Transnet worker or somebody complaining on a certain issue, we would then advise the Minister on that and respond to that complaint. And then other ad-hoc assistance relate to responding to parliamentary questions and reviewing cabinet memos that come from other ministries. We will have to advise the Minister on the impact that the issue that's discussed in the memo would have on the department or the SOE and what our response is on that. And then other work we'll be doing is include drafting articles on legal issues, on any legal issues.
Maybe
before you go to government, instead of the problem of sharing and sitting down, you start quitting. No, but before you continue with governance, I just want to check from page 13 again, there's another big starting on the document. If you check page 13, the swap program leader again. I'm not sure. So
that is a mistake, actually, because that's the risk. That's what that risk would be doing. Right, that should be.
No, we can continue to govern it. So it's just an incorrect heading.
The next sub-program is governance. A lot of the work for governance is being completed in this new year, and most of the work relates to projects that are actually modules, that are going to be modules of the shareholder management legislation that we're proposing to take through to Parliament. So effectively in the new year, what we will be doing is that once that legislation has been adopted by Parliament and has been signed into law, we would then start working at implementing those modules of that Act, in addition to the provisions of the Act across all the SOE. And one of the modules, so I'll just skip to the next one because I started on the shareholder legislation already, but one of those modules is the board remuneration guidelines, which already has been approved by Cabinet. So the work we would then be doing would be reviewing and monitoring implementation of those guidelines by SOE. Currently under the guidelines, we set up categories. For example, we categorize the different SOE, and then we also propose bans for remuneration for executive directors, the CEO, and then non-executive directors. And so if an SOE wants to deviate from the guidelines, they would then have to come to the Minister and propose why they want to motivate for deviating from those guidelines. So that's the ongoing work that governance would then would do, and we anticipate that work should take about a week, and then the due date for any submission of responses to the SOE and advice and recommendations to the Minister would be a week after receipt of the request. And then part of the ongoing work from governors again would be board appointments. And here we would be working also very closely with the DPE SOE teams. And they would assist us, because part of board appointments, what governors also identify as other skills. We look at the composition of each SOE board, and one of the key areas of focus on are the skills that are within each board. So as board members retire, resign, or their terms expire, we then look at replacing them, and therefore we look at the skills profile of the board, and governance would then also undertake a vetting of the directors through CIPRA, and then in extensive consultation with the DPESOE team, we then search for suitable candidates. And we're also starting to liaise with the SOE teams to assist in giving us nominations of potential candidates for the board. And then we obtain the minister's preliminary approval before we take it through to cabinet, before we take the appointment through to cabinet. And that work takes us about 2 months. Our final output would then come a week after we obtained the minister's preliminary approval. And then ongoing work again, which is also part of the corporate governance practices that we seek to establish through the shareholder management legislation, would be board performance evaluation. Essentially, here, the SOE board itself would submit a performance evaluation to the department, and then the department would review that and advise the minister of that. It is a requirement for SOE boards to submit performance evaluation reports. This is obviously part of the oversight function of the department, and it's also one of the areas that we're seeking to emphasize and strengthen through the shareholder management legislation, that is performance of the SOE themselves. And our focus would be also on performance of the board, hence the evaluations, because that's our link, our direct link with the SOE itself. So that work we anticipate will take about 2 weeks, and we would have the final output would be annual performance evaluation. In terms of both local and international best practice, and also we would check it against the targets, the KPIs that are set up in the shareholder compact, because those KPIs are also the performance measure that we set as a shareholder for the SOE itself. And then the next set of activities for governance would be around the AGM. There's quite a lot of work that can go around the AGM, primarily because this is where the annual reports are issued. This is also the time where board members, their appointments are confirmed. And so the work that we do is the SOE would also submit a draft agenda, notice of agenda to the minister. And if the governance would work at identifying any additional agenda items that we recommend for minister to include in the AGM agenda. And we would also monitor legislative compliance by SOEs, and that's part of the review that we do of the annual report. In the review of the annual report and the financial statements, and that we would do in conjunction with the SOE teams. The SOE teams would obviously lead the review of the financial performance of the SOE, and most of the work that governance would be doing would be to check legislative compliance of the SOE, and also look at their performance as set up in the annual report itself. And this work we anticipate would undertake 2 months before the AGM, which should take us about 11 to 15 days, and would come as part of the entire TPE, because we would also get submissions from the TPESOE teams on memos that go to the minister around the AGM. And that's fine. And I mean, our outputs there would be a submission of additional agenda items, an analysis of the annual report and the financial statements and the resolutions, and then submitting these to the minister for his final sign-off before the AGM. And then also, if we have any specific comments around the directors, their interests, you know, whether they're in conflict of interest, for example, or if they haven't submitted the performance evaluations and that type of thing, we'll also advise the minister on those. We'll also have an SOE governance review. We're also in the process of finalizing a governance audit template. And once we've finalized that audit template, we would also then notify the SOE of that template and request them to start implementing it. Basically just doing an audit of their compliance with sound corporate governance practices, and we would then monitor our ongoing implementation of and compliance with that template, and we would also encourage with SOE teams to get their comments around the SOE's compliance with that template, and then brief the minister on any analysis and findings that we have. And then on governance, again, one of the key activities is around the shareholder compact. Essentially, governance around the shareholder compact plays a coordinating role. So the essence of the shareholder compact is that it's our oversight tool and to ensure the performance of SOE against specified targets, both financial and operational targets. So a lot of the work would be done by the DPE SOE team, so I'm not going to go into a detailed discussion on this because I think the SOE teams are going to cover the extent of content around the shareholder compact. And then similarly with the corporate plan. The corporate plan is a business strategy of an SOE over a 3 to 5 year period. Again, most of the work is also for governance is essentially a coordinatory role that governance plays with the DPE SOE teams, because the DPE SOE teams will be the ones that review the business strategy of the SOE to also see if it complies, if we need assist them to achieve the targets that are set out in the annual shareholder compact. And I think essentially that's more or less the same thing, Sandra. Okay, this one is actually the one that the chairperson pointed out and restated it was a mistake, because it should actually read sub-program risk management instead of legal. As part of risk management, obviously one of the things that this sub-program would be looking at would be any risks that emanate, that would be reported to us by the SOE, and it would be risks at the level of the SOE itself, and then across, we look at risks from the individual SOE through their reporting. We've got both monthly and quarterly reports. Under the PMA, most SOE are required to submit quarterly reports and annual reports. However, there are some SOE that are required to submit monthly reports to ourselves and to National Treasury, and that requirement usually comes from capitalization of the SOEs, and so it would be SOEs such as SAA or Danel, for example, where the Minister of Finance and National Treasury feel that there should be additional reporting monthly instead of waiting for quarterly reporting. And a lot of the reports are obviously deal with financial and operational issues, which the SOE teams would do, but we would input into that work to assess any risk that could come from the operations or even from the finances or that the SOE itself has reported. And the time required for that type of work would be about a week for the monthly reports, and then submissions are monthly, and they essentially we input into a submission that is prepared by an SOE team. And then our intention also is to input into the annual report, and there again state the shareholder risk, the systemic risk across all the SOEs, and we call these also the shareholder risk, because those are the risks that the shareholder will be worried about. And the time required for that work would be about a month. And also if we intend that we would submit a memo to the minister a month before the AGM, and we'd input it into the AGM memo that comes from governance. This is so also if the issue that the minister wishes to communicate with SOE, he can do so also at the AGM. And because a lot of the risk issues may also have to do with strategic issues. And then we part of the reserved shareholder rights under the TFMA are that for certain significant and material transactions, SOE are required to apply to the executive authority for his approval. And now, so RISC is in charge of reviewing those applications and coordinating input from the from across the department on those applications. And the reason RISC is in charge of that is so that they can assess what risk the transaction, if any, could pose both to the SOE and to the shareholder, government as the shareholder. And so as part of that, the department has developed transaction guidelines to assist the SOE, and has also developed a significance and materiality framework that we that was put as part of a memorandum of understanding that we're signing with the SOE so that they can implement the framework. This is also to assist them to determine which transactions they need to bring to the minister for his approval. So essentially in the framework we would state what we consider to be a significant and material transactions that require the minister's approval, and then any other transactions that don't fall under that, then the SOE can continue with those. And some of the issues that the framework looks at the financial size of the transaction and whether it could have any cross-border implications or operational, strategic operational implications for the SOE within the sector, within its industry, and for government itself. And in terms of the TFMA, we're required to process that application and respond to the SOE within 30 days of receiving the application. And this is ongoing work. And one thing that the DG had also mentioned during her overview was that what we're also trying to do as part of governance and with management is to get the SOE to advise us in advance of any transaction they intend applying to the minister for his approval under Section 54, so that we also start just preparing ourselves when it comes to that work. And then we will then do follow-up, because in some instances the approvals come either with conditions or some transactions take too long, or some are not successful, or there could be any number of issues that relate to transactions that are approved. So we will then monitor the implementation of that transaction by the SOE. And this is what we're also going to start doing, is then preparing a quarterly report on all the approvals that have been granted, and then give, as part of that, also give a status report on progress of implementing the transaction. And we've also, RISC has also a RISC forum with RISC managers of the various SOE to discuss various issues that relate to risk management. And I'll say that out of that forum, one of the issues that came up, for example, was one of the risk areas that the SOE and the department will also start focusing on include issues such as contract management across all the SOE. So the intention there is also to get the SOE themselves to focus on risk management within the SOE itself, and also being alive to risks that could affect the DPE portfolio as a whole and the shareholder. And then from the risk fund, also then one of the things, the activities we undertake in risk is to monitor the shareholder level risks and report on these. And the reporting that we do, we're also doing it in the DPE board, which is a new structure that has been set up since the establishment of the CITM office. And it also basically, the focus again would be on the entire portfolio. So the shareholder level risk, the shareholder will be looking at risk of the entire portfolio and how they impact government. And the time required for that, for determining these risks for each SOE and across all SOE would be about 3 weeks. Again, this is also ongoing work. And as part of that, we also prepare a risk matrix just to for ease of identification of critical risks for the different levels of risks and the risks themselves. And then to assist us with risk management, we're also going to procure and implement a software tool. For that, we would need to develop the terms of reference, and we're going to advertise in media and for proposals, and then evaluate those proposals, and then appoint a bidder and implement the tool. So I anticipate that will take us about 3 months, and we intend implementing the tool by December. And then finally, under risk would be the development of enterprise risk management related metrics and models. And there we would essentially assess criteria for each enterprise risk management nominal fee, and we would refine maturity levels and assess the risk management across each SOE. And that work will take us about 3 months, and we intend completing it by the end of June of this year, of 2008. Okay, we also, I mean, part of, to enhance our risk management, we're also going to try and benchmark our risk management practices within South Africa as well. And that work will take us about 2 months to SOE, and we should be finished by September of 2008. Okay, these are just real quickly. The forum have already discussed. We're also involved in assisting risk management and the training center initiative. And then just the specialist positions are really issues. Well, the first one is the contracting and contract management that I discussed earlier. And there we would also develop guidelines to assist the SOEs as part of the risk management.
Thank you, Chair. I just wanted to touch very briefly, because I see we are running out of time, on a few matters, particularly around risk management. And I must say that it's really quite irritating that Dr. Moni van Dijk is not here, because that means I have to act as the opposition and pose difficult questions. I really think that we must call him to order, Chair. Can I just find out, on the issue of risk management, since the outages in the energy crisis in January, have you taken any special steps to evaluate risk management as far as the energy crisis is concerned? Have you changed anything in this particular program to allow an alignment for that? And if so, can you give us some details? I just wanted to also confirm, I thought I heard that you said that there was an approval by cabinet of the policy relating to remuneration of officials at SOE. I just wanted to confirm that you said that, because I couldn't find it in the handout per se. And then lastly, again on the issue of risk management, you mentioned that some SOE are required by Treasury particularly to report monthly, while others report quarterly and so on. Could you give us the SOEs that have to comply with monthly reporting, and then also which ones report quarterly. Just on the issue of the bursary matter that you raised very early on in the presentation, I think we need a more substantive report on that issue. We'd like to know the extent of the problem that the department is saddled with. I assume it's only bursaries and not loans and stuff, but if there are loans, then we'd like a more elaborate report. Firstly, I think we need the extent of the problem in terms of how much of money is involved. Secondly, a progress report stating that when purchase has not been paid and how much you have managed to recover, how much is still in process, and how long. How old are the claims? That's the other issue I think that the report needs to stipulate. What has been put in place to ensure that there isn't a recurrence of this kind of situation again? I mean, surely if people leave the department at certain notice period, then surely there should be policies that, you know, if their loans and other things are standing, that those things need to be returned to the department. And I can't see why it is that the department has to be saddled with these matters under those circumstances. And I trust that there are policies in place to deal with it now.
There is a team outside, right? So those who want to wear some team, they can quietly go and come back. One break also. Many are in
I think on the debt recovery, can we give you a written submission on this, then detailing all the, all the issues that you have raised? And then I'll just basically take them back with us.
Let's say what would be the time frame for the last return process.
Two weeks.
May want to call you back to speak to that, and 2 weeks may be a bit late. So if we can get a report, let's say, by next week, let's say the end of next week, I think that would be a sufficient compromise.
Okay.
And then under monthly reporting, currently the SOE that are required to report monthly are also the SOE that has been undertaking massive restructuring recently, and those are ESCOM and DENAL. And then the rest of the SOE report quarterly.
Could you just add to that in addition to the restructuring initiative, it's also those SOEs that are receiving working capital. So you will find that PBMR and DENAL and South African Airways also report on a monthly basis. Those that report on a quarterly basis are Transnet, TASCO, South African Express, Airways, ESCOM. However, this is correct with the reference to ESCOM.
insofar as we have switched to a monthly reporting mode with ESCOM now. That's one of the examples of measures taken. And Transnet also reports to us on a monthly basis on their capital investment program, but not necessarily comprehensively.
On the remuneration guidelines, yes, those have been approved by Cabinet. And on ESCOM, yes, I have already stated that ESCOM now we've also converted it to monthly reporting over and above the quarterly and annual reporting. And also, this is something the Minister did mention in the morning, is that ESCOM has also now engaged internal experts, international experts, to assist with an audit of its operations and maintenance and all of that. And also what we have tried to also undertake is a government audit on ESCOM as part of the risk management. And internally, we've also started the initiatives that I spoke about that we're going to be undertaking in the new year on also reviewing the quarterly reports and the annual reports and analyzing those to assess the risks, not just to the SOE, because that's what the SOE will report, but also to government as shareholders. And we've also initiated under the office of the CICM an SOE dashboard. I'm not sure something to that. On the SOE dashboard, which essentially I think the focus that we've also tried to take as a department, which DG did mention, is not just because previously the focus has been on each SOE and within its own industry and sector, but now we're also taking a more comprehensive view of the entire portfolio and the impact that the portfolio would have on the state and on the economy of the country. So we're not just looking at each SOE in isolation, we're trying to look at the entire portfolio and how they affect the economy. One thing that has been a challenge is capacitating our risk management sub-program. I think so one of the slides that we had put up earlier was one of the vacancies was on the director risk. And that's been one of the longest vacancies because it's not easy to get risk experts. So we're going to have to look at other ways of capacitating the department on that, whether it's through sourcing external service providers for brief periods and that kind of thing.
I could just add to this issue and explain the relationship between the risk team and the SOE. The risk team would essentially focus on questioning the likelihood, the probability, and the potential impact of events or omissions or lack of focus or attention to certain matters. Risk, the assessment of risk is not exclusively the role of the risk team. In fact, the risk team is very much dependent on the work that's also done by the FAE teams, where one would have sector specialists. And I would encourage my colleague Chris Forley, who's our energy specialist, to perhaps explain in more detail the type of operational interventions in terms of key performance areas and targets that we would be precisioning going forward with ESCOM. So just to explain the role, the risk team would essentially look at the assessment of an SOE team and actually question independently whether the key systemic risks have been identified and whether risk mitigation measures are being deployed to address them. Then what I would like to highlight is the Minister mentioned this morning the issue of the impact that coal supply had on the unplanned events. And that is very, to a certain extent a matter of availability of the coal, but the contracting was also problematic. And I think Ursula mentioned the fact that we have detected across SOEs a weakness in terms of contract management, and that's one of the areas that the risk forum is addressing.
Thank you, Catherine.
Yes, everything was in regard to governance. Slide 6. Board appointments, review of board remuneration, and so on. And you know, the question of board appointments and board membership has been an issue in the Sports Studio Committee. Now, I see identified board members through consultation with DP, SOE teams. Now, those are the people within the department, the SOE teams, so not the FAs. Okay, man, this is something for you to think about and not to, to necessarily apply now. It is that you ask the SOEs, you ask other people for nominations or suggestions, proposals for board members. Maybe one of the institutions should also ask the portfolio committee. You see, you have business people on that board, business acumen and so on. We have people who look at the, let's say, the policy or political approach of government in particular. You don't have to be a pundi in economics to know whether this board or whether the SOE is exercising for what government intends for it to do. Then also the review of board remuneration is upon the request of the state-owned enterprise. Now that seems to create a bit of a conflict for me, you know. If my increase is going to be dependent on the people that I'm supervising, am I going to be diligent enough in supervising them? Am I going to be critical enough in supervising them? If those are the very same people who are going to come back and recommend to the minister that our remuneration should be reduced. Which is the review board remuneration upon the state on enterprise request. I think that this doesn't sit very well with me. And then your annual general meeting also, that would be the state on enterprise and the shareholder. Does that mean one person going to the minister to the AGM? Or is the group of people from the department that goes to the shareholder meeting? And what would be the possibilities of extending that to include the representation from the portfolio committee? And just for the record, those are an unmandated question. Yes.
On the first one, the board appointments, we'll take that into consideration, sure. Because currently, what we have been looking at are primarily financial, business skills, legal, and risk management skills. So we will consider including getting input from the portfolio committee. And then on the remuneration, as I said, we drafted guidelines, and in those guidelines we set out categories for the SOE and suggested and we also to guide them into the bands on the remuneration that they should be receiving. And so the request from the SOE essentially would be if they want to deviate from the band, from the guideline itself, from the, what was proposed in the guideline. And there, in the guidelines, we also set up criteria on the basis of which they can motivate, and then the minister, with the assistance of the department, then reviews that motivation, and then the department would recommend to the minister whether or not to approve such deviation, and the minister would decide on that. But it's quite specific criteria on the basis of which they can motivate, so they have to meet that.
But it's still at the request of the people that I am supervising. And so the people that I am supervising must request that I get an increase.
Sorry,
Is that the same correctly, Chairperson? You're saying that the state-owned enterprise must request the minister to review me, my salary, as a board member. Now, I am there to supervise that state-owned enterprise as a board member. So the people I am supervising, that I am supposed to be critical of and watch the medical, they're the people who are going to ask that I get an increase. It just doesn't seem right. Maybe it should be an outsider that should be doing it.
Well, the request wouldn't come from management. I mean, it would come from the board of the SOE.
So the board asked for the increase. Okay.
The board asked the reviewer of the party.
Chair, actually, the proposal by Mr. Hendrikse happens to be the practice. What happens is we don't necessarily commission an independent study, but we require supporting information from an independent study audited by by companies of the likes of PwC, Deloitte, etc., with reference to market-related comparators. So an independent advice is sought. On that, I think the Hendrikse's point is noted, however.
The last one, Chairperson, I forgot, on the board, is this evaluation. There's a performance evaluation is done of the board. What is the basis of those reports? We're not asking about Mr. or Mrs. X that this or did not perform. But the performance of the board as a whole is an evaluation diagram. What is the status of that report? And is that accessible to the committee? So we can be confident that the people representing us are doing their work properly.
The intention also is because you would be overseeing and monitoring our performance. And that's essentially what we'll also be doing with the report from the board.
Yes, but it's what I asked this morning also. How do I know that the board of ESCOM or SA is performing their function correctly? I don't have consultants, I don't have expertise. The department has the same engaged professional people, no one evaluates that board. When I think for personal information, there's no assembly to sit in the meetings the whole time. But the part of the board, are they performing their part of training? That kind of information should be available to us.
Indeed, Chair, there are two levels of evaluations that take place. The one is the DPE evaluation in relation to board performance, reference to key performance areas and indicators, and that's what goes into the contract. And Mr. Henderson will recall that last year we only commenced the practice of, at the end of the year, reporting to the committee what the board's performance was in relation to the key performance areas. Now, we're in the early stages of defining those areas and the targets, and it would be a continuous process of decisioning that. But that would be the DPE level of evaluation. And that is essentially a financial and an operational output. Then there's also a process of board evaluation, which is facilitated by an outside party, but instructed by the board. That is a confidential report, because it is actually a report where board members comment on each other's performance. We are privy to that, and that's considered also by the Minister in assessing whether to continue with the appointment of particular board members. We also compare that with a disclosure of board attendance, etc., etc. So the peer review evaluation is a confidential report because it addresses specific people. We didn't want to make that a public.
Now, how do we evaluate the board? Where do we get that information? The chairperson came in with the annual report. I said, oh, no, I'm very happy with the work of my board. That's partly a recommendation. We know what SAE was, the previous board was 2 years ago. We don't say they were fired, but we all know they were fired. They were always late because we had the heating issue. But how do we know that people are doing the work? And we are not, they're not doing this as a courtesy to the country. I mean, they're being paid good money for it.
Chair, this is a very interesting point, and I don't want to belabor it too much, but first of all, in relation to what Mr. Hendricks is saying is, can he believe us, the CPE, actually?
And it's valid. It's a valid point.
If we say we put up these key performance areas and indicators, that they have actually been met. Now, first of all, in the annual report of the SOEs, the auditors actually have to audit and express an opinion as to whether those targets were in fact achieved. And they run a professional risk if they certify differently. So there's an independent party that actually audits that those indicators, those targets were in fact achieved.
Of the SOEs.
Of the SOEs. But the role of the board, keep in mind that the contract is an agreement between the minister and the executive authority with the board to achieve those targets. So the board's performance is measured with reference to those targets, one. Two, in terms of the annual report, boards are required to disclose board attendance, etc. So there are various mechanisms that are disclosed in the annual report of the SOEs, which we as DPE and the Portfolio Committee can access to determine whether a board is performing or not.
That maybe the one question relates to the data in terms of whether the current system we're having in terms of the board and the oversight of Parliament, because in other countries there's different setup. It's a broader question which may be to engage in on whether the current system is working.
I think Mr. Henderson touched on the matter that I think has got, it's almost a double-edged sword in one sense. But I think what you're saying is that ultimately it can't be that you measure your board members by the achievements of the SOE. And clearly, their relationship with regard to the SOE as well as their accountability to Parliament and so on would need to be teased out a little bit, and perhaps the more appropriate place to do it would be when you deal with the role that we are taking in March, where you actually take out certain standards with regard to board members and accountability mechanisms that don't exist at the moment.
Is it March
15 or 19? Thank you very much. I'm sure we are done with the legal risk management and complexity. Jefferson initially indicated that we are going to get a feedback about how we proceed for tomorrow and so on. I'm sure we can deal with those issues.
I'll deal with those issues, but you realize that you still have to do administration in the last few minutes that to the extent I was worried about time earlier. And I suggest that you take that presentation now and finish with it, because it may impact on how we go tomorrow. Tomorrow, basically, just to answer the question, there is a sitting of the House where will be addressed by the French President. And we are expected to, I'm not sure about his wife, but we'll make a special request. So we will be expected to go to the House for the address, and then we will be allowed to come back into committee, which is why I think we need to finish up admin now. Because clearly tomorrow the amount of time we'll be able to spend will be very little. So, Chairperson, over to you.
What's the name of admin, please?
My understanding is that the DG actually essentially covered the presentation on admin this morning. I don't know if there's anything other than that which the committee wants to us to report on, and then we could perhaps deal with that. But there is no separate presentation on admin.
Questions, because clearly there were questions that remained unanswered for admin that, you know, we understood that we, it was actually a suggestion not from us but from the department that they would deal with this separately. So perhaps if we can then do that.
No, we can take questions if there is still time to get back one to the listen for tomorrow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can you answer the question?
Yes, with regard to administration, I'm just going to find the right question here. There's a question I had asked about vacancies and resignation, not vacancies and resignation. And I asked last year also, you see, when we asked about the resignations and vacancies and all these things, we get the standard answer that, well, this is all. These people are in demand, people get better offers, and they're moving along all along. Those 11 resignations, I'd like to ask, if not today, maybe tomorrow we can get, what positions do those people occupy? The 11 resignations that are on slide 19. Thank you. Okay. The other thing, there was a, I don't know if it's for the administration, board induction. You know, just with board induction, we asked previously that maybe the department could arrange a similar program for us so that we better understand what the function of board members are. Maybe just a sort of an abbreviated school.
Perhaps we should just take all the questions. On the issue of disciplinary matters, I'd like to know, there doesn't seem to be a report, but there was some reference to it during one of the presentations, and I just wanted to know whether in fact there are disciplinary matters, how many are they, what do they pertain to, how old are the cases, and how far back do they go? Basically, a status report on those issues. I'm not sure, in terms of training and development, what that entails, and I think perhaps we need a further report on the matter. What exactly was the training initiative? How many people went through training, and what kind of development are we talking about? And how long, over what period of time? And of those people, how many would have been lost to the department? If you're with me. So people have been on training, and the department spent money, but lost them regardless. And then I'm not quite sure if the issue of transfers in this particular program were addressed. I'm not sure where the transfers here go to. So if somebody could maybe respond to that.
Thank you.
Uh-huh.
The problem that we are doing is that when you talk to patients instead of patients, so that's why we end up at the same
humble apologies with a bad measure. Now I just wanted to check whether from the committee we can actually just get that feedback later, whether an autumn school or a separate forum would be appropriate for the purposes of the induction.
The board induction.
Yeah. Whether it's something that you'd like us to cover at the autumn school, or whether you'd like to us to address that at another forum.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, we were just seeking clarification. We will, I think we will come back to the committee with alternative dates and proposals, and for the committee to decide which it considers the best way forward.
Thank you. There are other issues with the survey.
I can respond to the HR issue. The resignations, the 11 that were reported from previous portfolio committee meetings, we actually did come with that information. It's not in the presentation, it's in handout form. So we can get copies of that printed. We've got terminations and we've got appointments made April today.
And
yeah, so
I've
interviews
with even white people there.
Yes, we've got the results. It's not on this report, I could compile it probably in the next week. With regard to disciplinary matters, we do report to the PSC on an annual basis regarding disciplinary matters. There's also monthly reports, I can just follow up on that. But for purposes of the question, we have to get together a report in terms of what disciplinary matters we dealt with this year and the status of those matters. But it is definitely all recorded.
What we'd like to hear is perhaps a more detailed report going back a few years. So if there are cases outstanding, let's say, for 2 years now, then that must be part of the report, not just this year.
Okay, certainly we could do that. We do present to EXCO on a monthly basis as well, exactly all of that information, so that could be provided. The training and development reports, we can also present that, and we could make it a standing issue for every portfolio committee meeting if the meeting so requests. It's information that we've got on hand in terms of what training been we have, what training has been attended, and we don't have where the people who have, let's say currently have a bursary, have left the department, or people who have just undergone a training course have left the department, but we could attach that to the report.
Okay, well, is it in a week's time with the other report?
Yes.
Sorry, can I just get through? The last one was on transfers. The transfers, which would be interdepartmental transfers, we can certainly get a report to the Portfolio Committee on that as well. Both the positions that they are leaving in DPE and the positions they are going to in another department.
I don't think that we necessarily need a report on that, because in any case that will be part of your HR report to us. It's just a clarity issue. I mean, now I understand that is people who've been transferred to, or I'm not quite sure how we monitor them to work it out, but I guess that's salaries or something, that they go with their salaries.
Okay, I think there is confusion. I think the transfers in the financials are different transfers. The transfers that I refer to in HR are people who transfer out of DPE into another department. The transfers, I think, Sandy will deal with from the CFO's point of view.
Sorry, that's what I was going to respond to. The transfers in administration classified as transfers, and it falls under a category called households. Now that is further broken down into gifts, sponsorships, and donations. In terms of transfers, the accounting officer can approve any gifts, donations, or sponsorships under an amount of 100,000 rand per annum. However, we have certain initiatives that we support on an annual basis. The biggest one being 16 days of activism, which has been ongoing for the last, I think, 2 to 3 years. I can check the figures. And that is in the administration budget, the composition of the transfers. Even though it's classified as households, which is very misleading, and we are going to remedy that by giving a further explanation and a document that will explain all these things to you. The transfers in the other units are purely transfer payments to SOE. So we will give you a full explanation of all the what they call the SOE classification, which is the chart of accounts, the standard chart of accounts in government. And we will really elaborate with you, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, because initially the chair was talking about livestock. Now we talk about the household. And it's becoming more and more confusing. So if you can do that. Any questions? None. Our camp said that we go to the next presentation for tomorrow.
Well, we need to adjourn and
I'm not sure that it's about ready for this.
I believe we're all ready. We can continue.
Can you go through the one with the infra course program?
The program obviously for energy and broadband enterprises, which essentially deals with ESCOM PBMR and broadband InfraCo. DG has already gone through the purpose, the line corporate strategies, etc. What we're looking at is our priorities for 2008 and 9. One is portfolio management. We'll go through some of the detailed things under there. Quite importantly, the implementation of the National Electricity Emergency Response Plan, fast-tracking diesel replacement, which is also part of that. And then also quite important in terms of what's been happening on the system, the ESCOM system is monitoring capacity expansion, but not only generation, but also transmission. Something we're also looking at a lot more closely is generation adequacy monitoring. the implementation of a single buyer model, co-generation being brought in and independent power producers, and then also the generation transmission and distribution infrastructure maintenance and refurbishment, and specifically on distribution there. Also monitoring Eskom's nuclear build program, which is really going to be important from 2015 onwards. And then on Infraco side, monitoring the progress of the international submarine cable. Okay, if we just look at the budget for energy and broadband, this is a question that was asked a bit earlier. We have the MTEF figures, where you can see transfers, which is the third line in the top table. That's been broken down in the second table into broadband and Infraco, and you can see the amounts that are scheduled to be transferred to each of the entities during the next 3 years from 2008 onwards. You should look at the budget for next year, and you look at goods and services. Essentially, 3.2 million of that would be for consulting services. The rest would be for things, I guess, such as travel and all the ancillary type of stuff. Something I've actually disappeared. Okay, I'll have to get it for you. But what I've actually done, and the question that came earlier was actually I've got a slide that's got the structure of the actual, whatever it's a unit or a department or whatever you want to call it anymore, but there's 14 staff members, and we have three vacancies currently, but two of the positions are actually new, but I will actually get that slide for you. Okay, and then if we just go into the detailed business plan for the coming year, we have what we call the investment management section, which used to be called routine work, but obviously it's not routine, it's actually quite important, because that's how we manage the SAE. And if we look at what we do for Eskom, which should be similar for most of the SAEs, the one thing we look at is their corporate plan, the shareholder contact, which is quite important, and Sandra did ask me to speak a bit about the KPIs. And what we've done in the past is we would give them one figure, and the average for the year comes out fantastically, but as we've seen, things can vary dramatically through the year. So what we're planning to do now is to give them the average, but also a high and a low for things such as unplanned maintenance or outages. You know, system minutes lost. You can have a great average throughout the year, but you never go below or above a certain number. The SAE dashboard monitoring, where we have quarterly updates of the dashboard database, the quarterly reporting and the annual report, those are all the standard. But the idea is to not just assess the documents in the coming year, is to critically look at them and to see what are the issues that are going to affect you with SAE. And things that maybe they themselves, because they're immersed in it, are not really taking cognizance of. We're also looking at doing the 5-year performance review this coming year of Eskom. We have our monthly presentations on the performance of Eskom to the DPE board. Looking at the board strength, seeing what kind of skills they need, specifically with the challenges that they are being faced with. Putting together the investor briefs that DG spoke about, looking at it at the company as an investor, and then providing that information to the board, but also as was requested to the portfolio committee to see what things that are there that should be looked at. On the industry impact, and these are the projects that we will be undertaking, is to look at the capacity expansion program much more closely, because it's so critical. And this is where we will be starting with monthly reports, or we've started with it, and we'll be using the dashboard essentially to do those updates. Generation adequacy, very topical. Looking at not only the reserve margin, but the daily capacity adequacy. Reserve margin, we can go into that, that's a whole day discussion. But essentially it's the available capacity versus the demand any time of the day, and what is happening throughout the year, not just at the peak. Also quite important for the coming year is the tariff review that the energy regulator is doing. We need to engage with the regulator, looking at the fact that we want to bring in IPPs and Eskom's requirements in terms of their funding, and whatever the regulator does is going to determine the kind of support that Eskom will need. Yes, Treasury's already come through with this 60 billion rand commitment. But we have to see. It could be too much or too little, depending on what the regulator does. The visa replacement program is a big one in terms of the immediate requirements, and there the target is to actually get 2 million visas replaced with solar systems within 2 years. It's going to remove about 1,200 megawatts from the system. The project to capitalize ESCOM, looking at the funding requirements for the VOLT program, we're going to put a lot of energy into that. Implementing the single buyer model, that will help a lot in terms of not having all of the funding pressure on ESCOM or the delivery pressure, which is maybe spread it a bit among some private sector parties. And then the other two projects is auditing of generation and transmission. We wouldn't be doing the audit, but we would be assessing what ESCOM has done in terms of those projects that they have started. And also what the regulator is doing, because the regulator essentially put out a terms of reference to conduct a generation maintenance audit of ESCOM, and they recently completed a transmission maintenance audit. And then the national response plan, we have to play quite a big role in that to drive it and make sure it happens. And then the important thing is to see how can distribution infrastructure maintenance and refurbishment be upheld or improved while the regs are being established, and how we could probably use or possibly use the FAE to support that. And then new ESCOM's nuclear build, as I said, is quite important. We need to monitor what's happening there, even though the build is quite a number of years away to be online. There's the Forum of Executives in Energy, which is there to unblock obstacles to fast-tracking the new build, and we play a secretariat role as a unit on that. And then we have what we call ad hoc, and these are all the referrals, memos, etc. that come from the DG and the Minister, comments on the cabinet, memoranda, TFMA support on the application assessment, Prime Minister questions, she's not here. Publication of an article per annum. We've committed to publishing an article per annum. And then we have, at the moment, a flood of media queries that require technical responses. Okay, and then looking at Infraco, it's similar. We look there at their corporate plan. Obviously, Infraco is not as established as ESCOM, and a lot of these things are still in the watch, trying to get things smooth and sorted out. SAE dashboard monitoring, monthly updating of their dashboard. Their shareholder compact is also quite important, so that you can track the KPIs. They do monthly reporting, there we're developing the framework, etc. Also quarterly reporting, quarter 1, 2, and 3, and annual reports. And they also, we have to do a DPE board presentation on performance every month. Also to review their board strength and put together an investor brief, same as for ESCOM. And then industry impact, these are the projects that have been looked at for Infraco, is to review the impact of Infraco as it becomes operational, and to see what has it actually achieved in terms of bringing down the prices and availability and access, etc., to broadband. Also the international submarine cable is quite important, just to monitor and facilitate that. Looking at what capitalization is required, and there we talk specifically about securing the M-test submission, and then all the ad hoc stuff also that we do to support the GG office, Minister's office, and all the other things. PVMR, also looking at their corporate plan, their shareholder compact, monthly reporting. They do monthly reporting, and based on that, I think that's how the transfers are done to them, based on performance and progress. Also, updating of the dashboard, quarterly update, they do a quarterly update on that. And incidentally, the dashboard has been designed such that it will make it easier for us to provide the quarterly reports, because once information's in there, it's in a format that makes it easier to put together the Q1, 2, and 3 reports, and then the assessment of the annual report. There's also an expenditure monitoring committee that is run every month, where discussions are held with Treasury before transfer payments are done. Quite a big part of PVMR's issue also is the South African Power Project, because of the nuclear aspect of that project. DP board presentations, reviewing their board strength, and also doing an investor brief in the coming year. In terms of the projects, the project to look at government's role in developing a nuclear power sector, and there we talk specifically about things like how do you cater for premature decommissioning? What about the nuclear indemnity insurance that's required? Waste disposal plans, and the intention is to actually get a consultant in to assist with that. Also important, given the current increase in primary energy costs, etc., for the other types of energies, to look at what is the current levelized cost of electricity for different technologies in South Africa, to see whether the nuclear, specifically QMR, sit at the moment. There's a treasury investigation which is being monitored. And then what's quite important also is if Eskom is going to buy any of the PBMR units in the future, it's also quite important to engage with NERSA to know what kind of cost they would actually allow for the units. A new updated project implementation manual, memorandum. They have submitted one, but we felt that they should submit an updated one this year. Also the capitalization, all the transfer plans, etc., that's preparing the NCA submission, and then all the ad hoc stuff that's also done in support of the department. And that's it.
Thank you. That's very good. 20 to 5.
One of the things that we'll need to do, because it's kind of worked a little bit stuff, is to actually take it home and have a closer look at some of the information on this slide. But I just wanted maybe just an overarching question. I mean, I see that risk management is down to the team and so on. Do you do any of that at all under this unit? Specifically, obviously, to the Eskom and the PBMR and the Trekkers, or is this almost compartmentalized in the department, just legal and government? The reason I'm asking quite a strategic concern, because clearly, if you're dealing with some of these issues that pertain very much to things like the sustainability of your electricity generation capacity, and if you don't have an eye on risk management, then clearly it will fall through the cracks. I don't see anything about specifically risk management. I imagine it's supposed to be anything going to be overview, but if you can maybe just address that.
Yeah, thank you. In terms of your oversight, is your oversight, I think I've asked this before, is your oversight limited to looking at paper? You know, Eskom sent you a report. And I said, yes, we did this and this and this. And said, oh, okay, did this. So you got it. Or do you go to a particular power station and say, are they implementing what they're supposed to be doing? It's sort of a physical visit from your side. Secondly, with regard to the nuclear plant,
The future plans, I mean, this could be, you know, as it's supposed to be a safety plan there, you know, in case of emergency, how do you do evacuation? Has it been updated? Has it ever been tracked? Has everything been done? Are they actually said, how will it get the people that landed out of Atlantis if we have a problem? The third question is, I once asked, you know, you have all these issues about where you build a nuclear plant. And I thought, you know, maybe it could just go there where I come from, it creates jobs. But then somebody says, but you, there's a lot of jobs created when you build the plant. But after that, there's not that many jobs in terms of your local people. Has, maybe we should look at, is there a way of making it attractive for particular areas who want to have a nuclear plant? For example, in discounting the price of electricity to users within the, you know, and the further you are to the plant, the cheaper electricity is right there. Something like that. So that, you know, people in the Eastern Cape will say, no, please come and build a plant here. Otherwise, why would anybody want to have a nuclear plant more close to them?
No, you can respond to their question, but if you can't, you can carry them over. Some of them are going to be here. You can respond to them tomorrow, but you can respond now. But don't be on the answer to the
Okay, now I can explain. Firstly, in terms of the risk one, At least something we've identified is that most of the risk initiatives are run by the risk unit or department, and the SAE team actually participates, but we're not as integrated as we should be. And that is something that we are addressing. We're busy, there's a task that came from the BPU board essentially to do a risk assessment of ESCOM, and that task actually came to the SAE team now. You know, it didn't go to the risk team, and we had to now incorporate the risk team into that step. That's the one. The other one, I think you said, do we only look at paper? Yeah. And I think maybe it comes from me having been part of ESCOM at some stage in my life. They tell us things, and we look at it, but what I've done since I've got to GP is on a lot of the stuff, such as the current capacity situation, I get the base data from so the stuff that comes from the SCADA systems, etc., and then we do an analysis of that. If we need to, we can go and do, and we have visited some of the power stations. I must admit, we haven't done the helicopter thing that quite lost it, and, but a lot of the figures that come from ESCOM are interrogated, it's not just taken at face value. And I don't know if that's symptomatic of the new energy team, as it were, and the way that it works. But I can't remember the other one was... Kuberg, I know they do drills. What they do is at the Belleville office, they set up an emergency center, and they actually block off part of the floor, and they run drills as if they were evacuating the whole of the area. I don't think you've ever... No, the Kuberg area. They actually run...
I'm talking about Atlantis.
Oh, Atlantis.
I'm not talking about plants.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
Easy. I'm talking about Atlantis. Those people would all be exposed if there was
a problem. Look, I do know there's a plans in place. I don't know if they've actually evacuated the whole area at all. I'm not sure how practical that is, but I do know they've run the exercises to prove that they could do it. And I know they run it pretty much, as far as I know, at least once a year. Because I know when I used to come down to the Belleville offices, I used to run the Tableview load management system. And then every now and again, there's parts of the building that's just got telephone lines running everywhere, because they set up kind of as if it was a nuclear incident. And they had to now respond and get people out. And so they do that. The other one on how do you track people so that you can build a nuclear station. Yes, I think you're right. When a nuclear station operates, and that's part of it, is that you're not going to have the masses of stock. But in terms of the competitive supply development program, I think the JPS is going to do their presentation. That nuclear build is going to catalyze an industry in South Africa that will hopefully, those areas that we will be competitive globally. And looking at the demand for nuclear stations, and if you look at what China and all these other people are building, if we can achieve that, that will create a lot of jobs in manufacturing. Right. So I'm not saying the factory will be in that area. But maybe that could be part of it, to build some kind of industry in other areas. It might make sense because the station's going to be right there. So maybe you'd want your critical supplier, etc., to be near that station. So those are things that would have to be looked at, but I think that is a very exciting program that they talk about.
Thank you. We have to wrap up today. But tomorrow we'll go again into the question session. But we will add members to go through the other programs so that tomorrow we move faster in terms of presentation. If possible, we finish all what one for Friday and so on. The other issue is that we are meeting tomorrow at G475. That should be 15 minutes after the attendance of the address of the French president. After 15 minutes, after the attainment of that address, then it will be at G475 to start our meeting. I'm not sure that there are other
Do you know more or less what time that might be?
So usually it doesn't go over more than an hour. You start at 1 o'clock.
I imagine we start at 2 and then we'll go up to about 3 o'clock. So okay. Around 3 o'clock is when
I
assume
that we'll be also there listening to
the French.
No,
it doesn't matter. Okay, I just wanted to mention two things about some of the questions raised. First of all, is regarding nuclear safety.
In terms of the wrong, the regulator,
are you present, ma?
I beg your pardon?
Tomorrow is the present.
I'll just quickly closing those two questions so they don't come back. But in terms of the regulatory environment, the safety plan has to be updated every year, and I think the drills are actually supervised by the regulator. As far as the job creation point is concerned, just an interesting point that in South Korea, when an established nuclear plant, a significant amount of investment went into social development. With each plant, a certain amount of the budget has to have been social development in that area. So it's a thought that we will certainly follow through.
Thank you very much, Eva. I can
thank you for this positive.
Yeah, that's the